is the gavel. The conference committee on Senate File 1165 will be in order, and we have a quorum present. And our first agenda item will be discussing the changes on Senate File 1165. But before we start that, I'd like to have us just introduce ourselves, and then the members of the audience, if they go on, just introduce themselves too. We'll start with Senator Limmer.
I'm Senator Limmer. I represent Northwest Hennepin County, and have been around here for now 19 years.
I'm Senator Mary Olson. This is my first term as a freshman senator. I'm from Senate District 4, Bemidji, down to just north of Brainerd.
So I'm Senator Rick Olson from District 17, which is North Branch in Cambridge area.
And Representative Andy Welty, the chief author of Senate File 1165 in the House. And I represent Wabashon Olmsted counties, and just to let you know, we are going in at 9 o'clock, and I'm hoping to have the conference committee wrapped up in 15 minutes or less.
First term.
I'm Representative Steve Simon from St. Louis Park and Hopkins.
Representative Rod Hamilton from Mountain Lake. I represent Jackson County, Cottman County, and the City of Worthington.
I'm Mary Vanek, the Executive Director of PERA.
I'm Gary Carlson with the League of Minnesota Cities.
I'm Keith Carlson with Minnesota Intercounty.
I'm Tom Means, Legal Counsel with the School Board Association.
Gresh Wolf with the School Board Association.
Kirk Peterson with Rice, Michaels, and Walter representing Hampton County.
Sandy Nairn with Measure Lane Kramer. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Newspaper Association.
Katie Engler from the Department of Administration.
Scott Simmons, Association of Minnesota Counties.
Jillian Barker on behalf of City of Minneapolis.
And I'm Dan McGowan.
Well, thank you all for attending. We're basically clarifying language on two words, and I think at this time I'll call Mary Vanek up to address us.
Members, again, Mary Vanek, the Executive Director of PERA. We introduced a bill this year to adopt appeals procedures for our board in conducting a hearing before the Board of Trustees when an individual appeals a decision we made about disability benefits. If staff denies a benefit claim, the individual then has a right to go in front of the Board of Trustees to ask for the board to review the decision that staff made. In the appeals procedure language that we introduced on the pension side of things, we had included language to close those meetings for the purposes of discussing an individual's medical records. And Katie Engler from Department of Administration contacted us and said that wasn't the way to do it. We needed to do it another way. And so the league and the employer groups indicated that this bill seemed like an appropriate vehicle to attach our open meeting law language. So I worked with Katie, and she helped us come up with the language in section 2 of the bill that will allow, or it actually require, any public meeting in which an individual's medical records are discussed must be closed. And the language is originally submitted, we thought would do okay, but Senator Marty brought to our attention that it was rather broad and that he interpreted it to read that even if a board or a local governing body wanted to talk about medical forms and design of a form to collect individual medical data, that the language was broad enough that they'd be required to close the meeting for that purpose, and he didn't believe that was appropriate, nor that was what we had intended. So we asked that it just be clarified to add an individual's in front of medical records so that it was very clear that that was the purpose of closing the meeting.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Ms. Vanek, did you have any discussion of whether or not the way the language in 144.335 makes reference to the individual nature of medical records. In sub C, it says individually identifiable form. And did the people that you discussed this with, were they satisfied with just the word individual medical records, or would it be more correct in line with individual with the reference in 144.335 is instead saying individually identifiable medical records governed by. Has there been any discussion about that?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, if I may defer to Katie Engler from Department of Administration, who is much more expert on this issue than I.
Good morning. For the record, Katie Engler with the Department of Administration. In response to Senator Limmer's question, the definition of the term individually identifiable form in 144.335, that term is used only in the research language in section 144.335. The rest of that section addresses medical records more from either, it's geared towards an individual's medical records, but no place else other than in the research section is it referred to as individually identifiable form.
Okay, with that, Senator Limmer, does that address your concern?
Yes.
Okay, with that, I'd be looking for
Mr. Chair, I will move the language that we currently have in front of us without the term and individuals, and we'll discuss that. I think move that in a separate motion, but essentially I'm going to move Senate File 1165 as we have before us.
Would that be with the corrected spelling of health?
Yes, no.
Okay, any discussion? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, just so I'm clear, so are we including an individual's in the language to address this concern or not?
If we'd like to do that right now, I would restate my motion, but I think just to make it clear, I will move the language that you moved out of the Senate and adopt that because it's similar, or it's the same language, exact same language. And then what we can do is go back and you can move the position of the House as far as the language that we adopted with and individuals, and then it'll all be included.
Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, then we're looking at discussion on, or a motion on the House language. So you'd like to move that.
I'd like to move that we include the two words and individual on line 2.29 after the subparagraph 4, just before medical records.
Senator Olson makes that motion. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That is approved.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Olson, for conducting the meeting well and moving along rapidly. And I'd just like to thank all of the people who came to witness this and participate this morning. Mary Vanek, I just want to especially thank you for clarifying this and working with us throughout the process. And with that, I guess I would just entertain any questions.
Okay.
Any other discrepancies, any other issues that people have? Otherwise, I think that we are done with this meeting.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I've had some side conversations with some of the promoters of this bill, and my concern on the Senate floor was how, in the event of a pandemic where there needs to be a closed, or perhaps a closed meeting, or a meeting that would prevent the easy movement of people to know what the government is doing in light of an emergency, how would the public know that there would be such a meeting taking place? And I think that's important to put on the record. Is there anyone that are the promoters of this bill?
Senator Limmer, I think at this point I would call Gary Carlson up.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. All of the notification requirements for the meeting, for the open meeting law under Chapter 13D would apply to these meetings as they would apply to any other meeting held by a governmental entity. And we really modeled the language for this bill after existing language throughout the statute that applies to other commissions, boards, and the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. So any meeting that would be conducted under the auspices of this new law would have to have the normal meeting requirements.
Mr. Chair, there's also references in the event of an emergency under Chapter 12 that in the event that a government facility was either destroyed or useless by either a terrorist action or, in this case, it could even be a pandemic event, where the building itself could be infected with something, some type of foreign disease. Chapter 12, I know that is not made as the reference in this particular bill, but Chapter 12 does allow for other government buildings to be used as a meeting place. The important thing is to have a place where a record is kept so that the public can have access to it, have access to understand what was the reasoning behind the decisions that would be made. Terrorist activity is a little different than a pandemic, and yet nevertheless, in this particular bill that we're creating today, we're requiring at least one member of the body, the governing body, on page 1, lines 22 through 24, to be physically present at this regular meeting location. Now, if the building is infected with a pandemic virus of some sort, who's going to be the volunteer to be at that particular governing location? So I hope, at least for the purposes of the record, that I'm hoping, and I tried to explain that a little reference to Chapter 12 might be nice. I see on page 1, line 15, there is a reference to Chapter 12 and an emergency that would be declared. So now that we have that on record, I feel more confident that this is a good bill.
And Senator Limmer, I think also the language on 1.23, it does say, unless feasibly, unfeasible due to the health pandemic or emergency declaration. So Mr. Carlson has indicated to me that he would be willing to work over the interim with you to develop language that would address your concerns, and I also appreciated your concerns of the public being having access. So,
One other reference, Mr. Chair, is once decisions are made during this critical emergency of a pandemic, how would the public know where to go for perhaps treatment or medical attention or escape routes from an area that would have to be managed on traffic movement? How would the public know that? Is there any requirement here that these decisions would be made? And then is there any public knowledge of where the decisions that are made at these meetings go to?
It sounds like you've got yourself an interim project. I believe that you know, there's discussions in communities about reverse 911 and those kinds of things, but I don't know if, I suspect every individual community is going to have an emergency plan, but I don't think I can answer your question, and I don't know if there's anybody here that could either. So, Representative Wells.
Senator Olstein, Chair Olstein, if you look at, it looks like number 5, lines 2.1, all votes are conducted by roll call, so each member's vote on an issue can be identified or recorded. If you're going to be recording the roll call, I would assume that you're also going to be recording or essentially taking minutes for the meetings that are being conducted. And that's why the language was laid out in here that, you know, if a member of the public requests, you have to make the accommodations in order for them to participate in the meeting, in order for them to hear the meeting. Also, just going back to the issue you brought up before of how will people know about this, I know that question came up on the floor, and we were talking about Section 13D.04, the open meeting law, which states essentially that you have to notify all of the people who are on record as needing to be or requesting to be notified whenever a meeting is conducted. So all the newspapers, all the media outlets that are normally notified would be notified under this. And then it also talks about other electronic means, whether it be on the radio. It talks about posting the meeting notice at the site or at the location. And so I really believe when they put this language together, they work through all of those questions. And if there needs to be clarification, like I said, we can work on that over the interim.
Okay, well, with that, our business being completed, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Kate.
I would have been, I should have had that with me. I'm sorry.